Good morning. I will be reading from John 6, 56 through 69. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me and I in him, just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so the one who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. Your forefathers ate manna and died, but he who feeds on this bread will live forever. He said this while teaching in the synagogue in Capernaum. On hearing it, many of his disciples said, "This is a hard teaching. Who can accept it?" Aware that his disciples were grumbling about this, Jesus said to them, "Does this offend you? What if you see the Son of Man ascend to where he was before? The Spirit gives life, the flesh counts for nothing. The words I have spoken to you are spirit, and they are life. Yet there are some of you who do not believe." For Jesus had known from the beginning which of them did not believe and who would betray him. He went on to say, "This is why I told you that no one can come to me unless the Father has enabled him." From this time, many of the disciples turned back and no longer followed him. "You do not want to leave too, do you?" Jesus asked the 12. Simon Peter answered him, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. We believe and know that you are the Holy One of God."
Thank you, Sean. Good morning. Well, I really wish that you all could have been with me Wednesday around lunchtime, because the way that I prepare when I preach is that I just preach it over and over again throughout the week to try to help the thoughts to form and figure out how to put it all together. And Wednesday was really, really good. So it can only go down from here, but we'll just see how this goes off. I don't know how many of you know where I work or what I do. Some of you probably know that I work for Dell, because on a fairly regular basis I'll wear a shirt and it'll have something that says Dell or some tech something on it. But I'm in sales. And if you had asked me, or if you'd told me 5 years ago that, you know, in 5 years you're going to be a salesman, because this is the first sales job I've ever had, I would have probably laughed at you. And because I would have thought, well, you just don't know me very well, do you? In a lot of ways, if you know my dad, you know me, kind of laid back, little reserved. When I think of salespeople, I think of someone who's kind of out there. I think of two of my uncles who were used car salesmen, who we called shysters. They're in heaven now, and if they were to come down, they would say, "Yes, we were shysters." but there's a lot about sales that is, when I think of sales, that kind of turns me off and probably turns you off as well. I always feel like when somebody's trying to sell me something that they're trying to take advantage of me. There was this man that I called this last week, so I just got a promotion, but it means that all of my customers, I've had the same customers for the last 3 years. Now they're all new and I don't know any of them. So at Dell, they teach us what they call relationship sales. It's not just about a transaction, it's about building some relationships with the people that you're working with. And I call this guy, had never met him, he's in commercial real estate, and I said, I'll make up a name, "Mr. Jones, this is Paul from Dell," and I could tell that he was in his car, I could hear the background noise, and he had me on speakerphone, and I said, "Sounds like you're busy, it sounds like you're driving, so you may not have time to talk to me. Would you like to just go ahead and hang up now? Or would you give me a minute to tell you why I called, and then if you still want to hang up, we can do that, or if you got some time, we can go from there." And he paused, and he said, "Oh, that's really good." I've never had a salesman call and offer to let me hang up on him. And so he gave me a minute. Anyway, it didn't go anywhere. Which is when you're in sales, that's kind of how it works. It most of the time it doesn't go anywhere. But they really encourage us to develop those relationships. So a part of making the transition into my new job was calling some of my former customers that I had developed some good relationships with and to let them know that this person over here is going to be the one taking care of you now. And there's one guy, he's also in commercial sales, but he's in LA, and we've worked together, like I said, for 3 years. And when I called, I said, Sean, I've got to tell you something. I'm not going to be your account manager anymore. I wasn't even looking for this job. My boss recommended me for it. And, you know, for some reason, they decided to offer it to me. And he said, well, I want you to tell your boss that I'm mad at her. And I really felt like that was a success because it meant that it was, for me and him anyway, more than just a transaction. It was more than just a what can I get out of you kind of thing. And I told him very early on, one of the very first times I called, I said, listen, I'm going to make a promise to you. We're going to give you the thing that's best for you. Because I could sell you something that costs a whole lot more. And if I do that, you're just going to end up getting offended at me, and you're never going to buy anything from me again because you're going to say, that's the guy that took advantage of me. But one of the reasons why we don't like salespeople, and I told one guy this week, I said, I'll be honest with you, I thank you for picking up the phone because I screen my calls. And if it's from a number I don't recognize, I don't answer it. I don't want to talk to salespeople. I don't need to extend the warranty on my car. If I need something from you, I'll let you know. You don't need to call me. And car salesmen are the worst. I hate car salesmen. And let's be honest, so do you. Now, we all love Alex, right? I didn't see him this morning, but in case he listens to this, Alex, we want you to know we love you. You are the only car salesman that any of us love, but we do love you. But gosh, the last time I went into a car lot, I was trying to, well, not the last time, but one of the last times. I was trying to, I had a car that I was leasing, and I was just going to give it back to him, told him that, or actually I was going to buy it. And so I called the finance company, and they said, you need to go into the dealership. So I went into the dealership, and I got this young sales guy, and he was guaranteeing me that he could get me in a brand new one of the same car that I was driving for less money. And I said, you can't do that. Oh, yeah, I can. I said, oh, well. So I pulled the car salesman trick on him. Well, put it down on that paper then. You know, write it down. They always want to write something down and say, okay, well, if we can do this, then will you proceed? So I was like, okay, well, if you write it down and then let me sign my name to that. And so he wrote it down. And he said, now, if we can do this, you'll buy the car. I said, if you can do this, I will buy that car today because you can't do this. So I'm not walking out of here with the car. He said, okay, well, let me go talk to my sales manager. He goes back and he spends 30 minutes back there and he comes out and he says, we can do it. And I said, well, all right, send me to your finance guy. And I sit down with the finance guy, and the finance guy says, we can't do that. And I said, I know. Would you bring that guy in here and tell him that? But that's kind of how relationships go when they're transactional like that. When we turn it into, you give me something and I'll give you something in return. Because we're always wanting either to take advantage of someone or to avoid being taken advantage of. Because when it's a transaction, we want it ideally to be a good transaction for both involved. we don't want to be the one who's taken advantage of. I mean, we don't mind if we walk out and say, hey, I think I got a good deal. Okay. But I sure don't want to walk out thinking I got taken advantage of. And so, you know, you go into the car lot and you're there all day to be taken advantage of. Well, sales is like a lot of life. It's about transactional relationships, but it's not just in sales relationships, but often personal relationships are transactional as well. What am I getting out of this relationship? And I'm not saying that everything being transactional is inherently bad. We want to get value from relationships that we have. I've got a friend here today, Bo. Welcome, Bo. We've been friends since junior high, and there have been times in my life that I've thought, I don't know why Bo still tries to get in touch with me, because he's the one who always reaches out first. He gets the worst into this deal. It's like I never think, oh, I need to get a hold of Bo. Or if I do, it's when I'm working and then I just forget about it. But thank you, Bo. I always appreciate the fact that you reach out to me. But we want our personal relationships to go well, but we can turn them into transactions as well. And if we're honest, we can make our religious faith a transaction as well. What am I getting out of this? In fact, I would probably suggest that in the context at least of the U.S. church, and I would just say in the context of the church that I'm familiar with, so largely conservative Baptist Christianity in America, that it can be, for many people, primarily transactional. I mean, as a pastor, I would often hear, what do you have for, fill in the blank, what do you have for senior adults? What do you have for single adults? What do you have for children? What do you have for youth? And it was always kind of, what's in it for me? I can't think of one time as a pastor that I had somebody come and say, what can I give back? It was always, what can I get? What's there? What are you doing for me? And so we turn it into a transaction. And that's a bit of what's going on here in John 6. I know that's kind of a long introduction, but that's a bit of what's going on here in John 6, is that we're familiar with the fact that Jesus drew a lot of crowds, but in this story we discover, as a part of the story, that the crowds start to walk away. They start to diminish. And a large part of it was because they weren't getting out of it what they thought they were going to be getting out of it. In fact, in some cases, they were getting the opposite out of it of what they thought they were going to get out of it. Jesus at one time accused people of coming just for the show, basically. It's, you come to see a sign, you come to see a miracle, you come to see a deaf person hear, or a blind person see, or a lame person walk, or a dead person live. You come to see something extraordinary, and then when the extraordinary wasn't normal, a normal part of what Jesus was doing, then people started asking, well, what's this all about? And then we get Jesus starting to dig deeper into what it meant for him to come. Now, you don't have to raise your hand. In fact, I suspect that none of you would, but there was a lot in this passage that Sean read for us from John 6 that, do you understand all that? Eating my flesh and drinking my blood. And I mean, if someone were to come up to you, if I were to come up to you afterwards and say, can you explain that to me? Is there anyone who would say, yeah, I'll do it? Go ahead, raise your hand if you think you could do it. Because honestly, I'd like to know. Because it's very, I mean, you're like, what? What is he talking about here? Eating his flesh and drinking his blood. In fact, in the early church, there was some Now, I think some of it may have been intentional misunderstanding, but early Christians were accused of being cannibals because of statements like this. To eat his flesh and to drink his blood. Oh, well, these Christians are just a bunch of cannibals. They gather together and they eat their Messiah. Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's not what he's talking about. I mean, I think that's one of the things we can rule out. But what did he mean? I don't know. And so it tells us in this passage that many of them thought that it was difficult. And I'm sure a part of what that means when it says that they found it difficult or hard, that it was hard to understand, but I don't think that's the full meaning of what he's talking about when he said when they said that it was difficult or it was hard, because Jesus' response to that was not, well, let me explain it to you, or let me clarify. It was, are you offended? Which kind of gives the idea that what's going on is that the difficulty was not simply about a difficulty in understanding, but it was a difficulty in accepting whatever it was that he was saying. You see, we like people to tell us that what we believe is right. They call it confirmation bias. We like people who confirm the things that we already believe to be true. We don't like it so much when somebody comes along and challenges what we believe to be true. And I think there must have been at least a bit of that going on. People leave churches all the time because, well, somebody said something about something political that I didn't agree with. Well, I mean, is politics your barometer for your faith? Or is your faith the barometer for your politics? Somebody said something about vaccines or about whatever, and I disagree with that. Well, is that the standard for us, or is our faith the standard for us? And let's all be honest. I mean, gosh, I hate to ask anybody to raise their hand for this because I'm afraid somebody might. But does anybody have it all figured out? You could stand here in the presence of the church and God and say, I know that everything I believe about everything is correct. No, none of us could do that. Because none of us have it all correct. But we still sometimes get offended when somebody comes and says, well, you don't have this correct. Well, there was a little offense going on here, and the offense caused people to walk away. And let's be just real honest. God comes to each of us and sometimes has some hard things to say. He may need to tell us, you know what? You're wrong about this. Here's a better way. Here's a more truthful way. And the question is, when those times come, how do we respond? There was a large group of people who got offended and walked away. And so Jesus turns to his disciples, the 12, and he says, what about you? Are you going to walk away too? Now we have, I know that we have this vision of Jesus that, you know, he knew everything and all that. Jesus was, I mean, I'm going to affirm, Jesus was 100% God. Jesus was also 100% man. And the Bible tells us that he dealt with things, human things, that we all deal with. I mean, to know what it means to be like us, he became one of us. And that means that, at least as I understand it, that when Jesus asked those 12 if they were going to walk away too, that he wasn't just sitting there saying, well, I know they won't, but I've got to ask this just to make a point. I really think that in his humanity, Jesus looked at his 12 closest friends and wondered, will you too walk away? But Peter responds, well, where would we go? Here's the thing. If you and I make our relationship with God purely transactional, if we make it, what am I getting out of this? We're going to be disappointed. We are risking walking away at some point because we live in a fallen world. And we don't in this life always escape the consequences of what that means. Something will come up in your life somewhere down the line where you'll bargain with God. Have any of you bargained with God before? I have. And if I'm being honest, I'd say I have fairly often. And recently, God, if you will just, then I will. And I turn my relationship with God into a transaction. God, if you will just, then I promise I will. And the thing is that that's not the way that God predominantly relates to us. God isn't there saying, well, if you'll just, then I will. The thing is that when those crowds walked away, I mean, we need to get the order right. It was the crowds that walked away. It wasn't Jesus that walked away. He didn't say, well, you know, You people are just so dense, go. You don't get it. So we'll see you down the road. Come back when you understand this a little bit better. He was still there. They were the ones who walked away. And one of the key things that tells me is that even when it's difficult, even when I'm not getting what I think I need or want out of my relationship with God, He is still there, and He is still for us. The goal is for us to become the kind of people who have developed a relationship with God such that our circumstances or the things that we expect or the things that we get are not the thing that drive us in that relationship with God. Because the reality of Christianity throughout the world is that very often it's very hard. And even when it's not, we still deal with the same kind of things that every human being on the face of this earth deals with. You're still going to deal with someone, whether it's you or whether it's someone you love, getting bad news from a doctor. At the very least, even if you live a long and relatively healthy life, you're going to get to the end of it at some point. And I was a hospital chaplain for a while, and I saw people deal with that often in one of two ways. But it was still a bargain. God, if you'll just take me now. Or, God, if you'll just restore my health now. But what if we could approach God and say, whether you take me now or whether you let me live, where else would I go? You alone have the words of life. Whether I get cancer or whether I live a healthy life, whether my finances are perfect or whether they are horribly imperfect, whatever my circumstances are, my circumstances do not determine. The transaction, the what I feel like I'm getting out of it, is not the thing that determines whether I stick with Jesus or not. One of the things that I appreciate about Todd's preaching, and it's really kind of typical of Baptists. I remember a number of years back, I was talking to a Pentecostal preacher, and he said, the thing I like about you Baptists is that you know how to keep Jesus the main thing. And you probably heard Todd's sermons and thought, well, it seems like he says this a lot. It seems like he said it before. You know why that is and why I think it's important and why I appreciate it? It's because there are so many times in my life that I am tempted to look somewhere else. I'm tempted to go somewhere else. I'm tempted to depend on something or someone else. And I need to be reminded over and over again, where would I go? You alone have the words of life.